Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Coaching Call podcast. On this podcast, we'll cover various types of coaching by trainers in sports, martial arts, fitness, and business. We'll discuss each coach's methods to getting the most out of their respective athletes or clients and how they attempt to change the platform in which they coach. Join us on a fun adventure as we discuss unique coaching styles. We've all been coached before, in school, at work, or on a team. Your first coaches were your mom and dad, who taught you how to communicate, tie your shoes, or play a simple game of catch. Coaching is a universal part of how we get others to get something done. Join your host, Rafael, and his guests on this unique journey in coaching.
Hi, I'm Sifu Rafael, and this is the Coaching Call podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. If you enjoy my show, go ahead and buy me a cup of coffee. Make it a large. To donate, go to paypal.me/SifuRafael. That's SifuRafael. I'm trying to keep this podcast free of advertisements. Anything you can donate is greatly appreciated. Thank you. How important is healthcare for you? And one of the things that I love about Dr. Kelsey is that she's always a big proponent for taking care of your health, even before you go see a doctor. The way you eat, types of foods you eat, the process of even understanding what you're putting into your body.
If you're eating your food that way and truly being in the moment, and feeling it and tasting it and using all of your senses, you're going to eat slower and you're going to be so much more in tune and aware of when that switch clicks on and says, you've had enough. And then you'll be like, oh, I'm good. And I'm like actually good because I'm so satisfied by that experience that I just had.
Dr. Kelsey is a naturopath doctor. She's made it her mission to change the narrative of healthcare. Welcome to Coaching Call. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to us about you.
Okay.
What on earth made you decide to become not a regular doctor, but a specialist?
Yeah. So this is a great question. And I will say that my journey is not necessarily unlike that of many people in my industry, where we at some point in our lives encountered something that led us to become disillusioned with the conventional medical model, and that kind of led us into a different path. So growing up, I actually never, ever thought that I was going to be a doctor. It wasn't a field that I was interested in at all. My dad was an RN, which was great. I have a huge respect for nurses, but that model of healthcare wasn't how I really pictured myself working. Right. I actually grew up for the longest time thinking that I was going to be in the FBI. I was going to be like a criminal profiler. And I was so in love with that idea.
I have to stop you there. I have to stop you there. Hang on a minute. But you know, you are in the FBI because you, as a doctor, you do that investigation, right? You look deep into your clients. Mm-hmm. So you know what? You're still doing it. I love that.
I like that. I could say I should use that somehow as a spin.
I'm your FBI specialist looking out for your healthcare, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're right. But I mean, at the time, I didn't know that the type of medicine that I practice now even existed. You know, so what I saw, kind of that typical conventional medical model where, you know, you only go in when you're sick or when you have a problem, and you maybe get 5 to 15 minutes with a provider and they give you a prescription and you're on your way.
Right.
And that just wasn't something I was interested in. And, you know, when I was in high school, I developed two different health issues, which certainly were not as extreme as a lot of people's can be, but right. I ended up getting chronic migraines. I actually got my very first migraine when I was in the middle of an interview with the dean of a college that I was applying to go to. I like left that interview. My mom was like, "What is wrong with you?" Because I was just on another planet. I wasn't present at all. But that ended up becoming something where I was getting these migraines every day. And I also developed eczema. I mean, most people, I have a lot of patients who have eczema. I just know a lot of people have eczema, and I am, you know, among them, but it got really bad when I was in high school. You know, as a high schooler, the last thing you want is to like be going to school and have these like massive patches on your face and your hands, you know, of just like this irritated, itchy skin. And for the people listening who have eczema or have had eczema, like, you understand, like, it's the worst.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I had these couple of things going on, and, you know, those in my family were qualifying circumstances for needing to go to a doctor, I guess. So we went and saw a couple doctors. I went and saw a dermatologist and was given all of the creams that they tend to give you, you know, tried different washes, tried different steroid creams, tried all the things, and nothing helped. Like, I wouldn't necessarily say anything made it worse, but it didn't help. And then I also went and saw a neurologist and got a workup for these migraines. And at the end of all of it, you know, and really she just did a physical exam, and she just kind of asked me some questions, and they didn't really ask in-depth questions. You know, like there was no question about like, what's your stress level like? Or, you know, what are you sleeping on too many pillows that's screwing up your neck? Or, you know, could there have been some type of food sensitivity triggering these? Like, none of that ever came up. And I left the office with a prescription for an antidepressant that was used off-label for migraines, because oftentimes it's like anti-seizure medications or antidepressants or things like that that are used for migraines. And I mean, I was young, you know, I was 17 or 18 at the time. So 17. So I was just, that's all I knew. So I was taking them, I was doing the creams, I was doing all this stuff, and nothing was getting better. Some of the migraine meds I was put on actually made migraines worse. And, you know, at a certain point in time, I had just had enough. I'd had enough. I was like, this is awful. This is not the life I want to be living. Now I'm a high school girl. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to for college. And all I can think about is like scratching my face off.
Oh, no.
It was awful. So one day I couldn't take it anymore. We have, you know, a number of natural grocer types of suppliers in our state. And I passed one, and I just out of sheer desperation walked in and looked for any product on their shelf that said it was for eczema. I just didn't even care. I was like, whatever, I'll take it. So I bought some product and I opened it up and I like squeezed it out. And I mean, this stuff was gross.
It didn't matter.
It's gross. You know, it's like this herbal base is brown. It smelled bad. I'm putting it on my hands and my face. I'm like, this is gnarly. And within about 3 days, the patches started clearing up. And this had been after like months of doing all of the, you know, the steroid creams and all the washes and all the things that I had been given. And it kind of, you know, it stopped me a little bit. And I was like, well, there must be something to this. You know, how come I've never heard about this? And so I started managing my skin that way. I know I'm bouncing back and forth, but these two things were happening.
Oh, that's fine. I think that when you think about, you're figuring things out, whether you know it or not, but your eczema, you know, the fact that you're putting on this smelly, gross, gnarly cream. I just put that up there, some gnarly cream, right? And when we think about what you're going through, I know what you're saying in your head. You're this investigative person who wants to know why. First, why did it work, right? Mm-hmm. Second, why does it smell so bad? but it worked, right?
Yeah.
So keep going. I love this, the idea of how you became so involved and so inspired to make a difference in our world. So thank you for that. Keep going, absolutely.
Yeah, so I kind of, you know, I started questioning that because that had never been a part of my life, like this natural medicine approach thing. And I was like, well, that's so interesting, you know? And then on the other side of things, what I started noticing was that I actually started to you know, I would start feeling really sad for no reason and feel like I was going to start crying for no reason. And I mean, at the time in high school, it was not uncommon, and it's unfortunately still isn't uncommon for teens to be put on antidepressants. Right. You know, it's a very, very common band-aid that's given to a lot of teens who are dealing with a lot of struggles. And so I knew from all of my cohorts who were on these things that it was very common for antidepressants to cause depressive-like symptoms. And I had been put on an antidepressant for my migraines. So I went back and saw that neurologist, and I tried to explain that to her. And I said, you know, I think there's something going on here. I feel like I am sad for no reason. I feel like I want to cry for no reason. And that's just not who I am. And I think that this is a reaction to the medication.
Right.
And she, like, straight up was just like, that's not possible. Like, she was like, the dose that you're on is small enough that it shouldn't be causing that kind of a response. And I don't think that's what it is. And I mean, you know, I was young, I was 17 or 18, but I knew myself, and I was like, this is not who I am. And I know that this causes a problem. And I just intuitively knew that it was that. And so I just stopped taking it. I was like, you know what, this is not what I signed up for. That's not what, you know, I'm not exchanging migraines for some kind of band-aid that's going to make me depressed and lethargic and not want to engage with my peers or with the world. So I just stopped taking it. And, you know, those two events were really, or those two pieces in my life were really what kind of set me on this path of trying to, or I guess of like questioning the system.
Right.
And wondering that, you know, could there be something different? Could there be something better? And so that kind of got me rolling on that. And again, I had no experience with that before. You know, my dad was a conventionally trained medical provider. It was certainly not something that he really knew much about or was even really open to. And so I was kind of on this journey by myself, trying to figure it out. I ended up in college taking a yoga class because that was like right at the time that yoga started becoming really popular.
Right.
And I was taking a yoga class, and my like little mat buddy who was right next to me, she was talking to me about this program that our college offered that was all about holistic health. So, you know, holistic is now a word that everybody knows. It's very popularized and people know it in mainstream culture, but that wasn't really the case at the time. And I was like, ooh, holistic, what does that mean?
You know what it means.
That's fancy, you know? So I started researching this program, and like all of the classes in this program were like botanical pharmacology and herbal medicine and you know, it's like, all, like, I'm trying to think of other ones that were in there, like CAM, which is your complementary and alternative medical therapies, and Chinese medicine, and like all these like cool things that I had never thought of. You know, it's like my worldview just immediately exploded because I had no idea that these things even existed.
That's pretty cool. Well,
that sounds so fun.
Yeah.
And I had like anatomy and all these things that were just very exciting and engaging to me.
It's like a whole new world, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is like a world that didn't exist for me. You know, it's like and I think that is like such a key point here too, is like, this is still the case. Like so many people don't even have any idea that I exist, you know, or what my field of medicine is. And it's just because we live in these little paradigm boxes that we're brought up in that, you know, if it's never challenged, you would have no idea that there's anything outside of that. But that, you know, it's like there are so many cultures in the world that all have their forms of medicine, and they all work in different circumstances. Correct. And if we can just recognize that and tap into them, and you know, I think they can all be utilized together really well. So that was kind of what came to me at this time. I was like, this is so exciting and so different. You know, so I signed up for a class. It was like one of their very first introductory classes. And at the time, I had kind of been like, you know, there has just got to be a better way. Like, there's got to be a doctor who will actually ask you, you know, how are you sleeping? What, like, how's your stress level? You know, ask you these things that we all know impact our body. So I walked into that class that first day, and the teacher walks in and he introduces himself, and he says that he was a naturopathic doctor. And I had never heard that term. And he started explaining what the training and the philosophy was of a naturopathic doctor, which was exactly what I had been looking for. And I just sat there and I was like, oh my God, you exist.
It's not a dream. It's real. Did you even pinch yourself? You're like, is this really happening?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a part of me that was a little bit bummed that I wasn't like the pioneer of figuring out this amazing medicine that was going to change the world. But I was also just like, for the first time, sitting in a room really among peers. You know, like people who really wanted something different and wanted not only something for themselves, but for the, like for the world. Like they wanted a healthcare that really was patient focused and patient centered and was really heart forward. And I, you know, it was the first time in like my third year of college that this happened. And I was just so, I was so enthralled, right? So I didn't know what I was going to do with this. I was just like, this is so interesting, right? And so it's funny that you mentioned, like, I'm still FBIing because I never thought about it that way, but I guess I was. And then probably like later in that year, that teacher who became my mentor approached me and he was like, you know, Kelsey, I think you really should consider going to medical school. He's like, you know, this isn't a path for everybody, but I think it would be a great path for you. And you know, to speak to the power of mentorship is that that was never on my agenda. You know, I had, that was the story I had told myself, was that I was never going to be a doctor because I wasn't interested in medicine. Right. And, you know, that I didn't want to do that much more schooling, you know, and like that was the story. And as soon as this person who was my mentor stepped in and said, you know, I think you should do this, I like without hesitation was like, okay.
You know, it's and you said it. It's the power of someone who believes in you. He saw something. He saw the energy that you had, and he actually just touched that right button at the right time. Because who knows, if you had seen him earlier, you may have said nah. But it was, you were at the right place at the right time. Exactly. Where it made sense to you, right? There was no, like you said, there was no hesitation. And when you think about the people in our lives who know the beauty and the depth of who we are before we even know it, that to me is just grand, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and we're still colleagues. I ended up going back and teaching at that school with him. So you know, it's just, It is amazing looking back. And, you know, it's true. I never wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't want to be a doctor in the conventional way. Right. You know, I didn't want to practice in the way that medicine is commonly practiced. You know, I didn't feel like that was serving at all. But then I learned, as I opened my paradigm, that there was this whole other world of being a doctor and of patient care. And you know, what that could look like. And so I went to medical school and I did it. And I loved every moment. I loved and hated every moment of it.
it's that love-hate relationship, right?
Yeah.
If you recall a couple of minutes ago, you said you did not want to go to extra schooling, right? Yep. There was no way you were going to do that. But then all of a sudden, someone who believed in you, someone who you trusted, said, I think you need to go in this direction. And you dropped all the negative beliefs that you had about schooling. And you said to yourself, I have to do this. But then you also, you loved it and hated it. Tell me about the love. And then I want to know about the hate. Because sometimes they kind of like, there's that struggle, right?
And they're often the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, the one thing that I want to just, I will say before I jump into that, is that that mentor also said something to me to like convince me of doing that changed my life. And, you know, this is something I tell students now when they ask me, is like, he said, you know, you can look at it as another 4 or 5 years of schooling, you know, that you're like working hard and you're studying and you're testing and you're doing all these things, or you can look at it as 4 or 5 years of your life that you have the opportunity to learn something amazing from the best of the best. And like that perspective totally changed it for me. It changed it from being about the work to about the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and that is what drove me through school. So, I mean, you know, the best parts about school is like when, again, I was kind of, you know, naturopathic medical school, we're a small community. There's like five colleges in the United States. You know, there's two in Canada. There's not a lot of us. So we're a small community. My class was about 100 people. And so you're very tight. You're very tight. And you are going through a very rigorous medical school program that it's kind of like, it's like you're in the trenches together. You know, it's like you're surviving it together. So, you know, and I know that's not the case for every class that goes through, but my class was really close. Like we were surviving this together. And so we had a great community that you're surrounded by like-minded people, at least like-minded in the field that you're all there for. You know, like we certainly had spectrums of beliefs about things, but that never mattered. I would say that, you know, I loved the intensity of it. I think it was the first time in my life for me educationally that I was like, I really was challenged. You know, I don't feel like academically I was challenged hugely up until I got into medical school. And then it like, there were times that I was like, how do people do this? You know, so I think like that was something that was really hard, but it was also really, you know, it was really amazing to be able to step back and see like myself surviving that process, you know, and seeing what I could accomplish and what I was capable of. You know, like the school itself I went to is really beautiful. It's in the middle of a state park. So it's like going to Hogwarts. You like get to go to school, go out on the trails and learn about herbal medicine and potion making. You know, it was like my like nerdy dream come true. But it just, it was like, you know, it was for me, I did a 4-year track. So it was the 4 most intense years of my life learning about this entire other world of healing. That was really, really powerful and could really, really help people and not have the same like associated costs or side effects. And, you know, I would say kind of, it's hard for me to separate like love and hate is the two very defined things because they really are the same thing. It's like, you know, medical school, and I'm sure this is true of all medical school. I'm sure this is not specific just to naturopathic school. And it's probably true of all master's or graduate programs, but the rigor at which you are under really, really tears you down to the essence of who you are. You know, like you just
makes you dig deep, right?
Yeah. I mean, people told me that, but I didn't really believe it going in. You know, but it's like all the frills and everything goes away because you're just like all you have is given to this program. You know, like every ounce. I mean, I would go to sleep thinking anatomy terms. I would wake up thinking anatomy terms. Like, I mean, like, that was your life. And so it really, I mean, it's a struggle. It is very difficult. I mean, it was the hardest thing I've ever done. So it breaks you down. But from that, you get to rebuild. I mean, you have to rebuild.
You have to, yeah.
Into the real person you are. You know, so it's like people leave medical school different people. Like it's impossible to go through that unchanged. And I think that is an amazing, amazing, beautiful opportunity that, you know, unfortunately, so many people in this world don't get or don't seize. So that's kind of what I would say. I mean, it was very difficult. I feel like I've been out of school 7 years now, and I still am living with some of the like physical breakdown that occurred from being in that program. You know, so it's like it has a huge impact on your life and your endocrine system and your adrenal gland. I mean, it's hard, but I would have never ever changed it.
You went through a metamorphosis, didn't you?
Well, it's like if you think about old cultures, you know, that the journey is part of the growing process where they take young men or young women, and there's this journey that they go on that allows them to transition into this next phase of their life. Like I really feel like grad school could do that for people, and it certainly did for me.
Yeah. Wow. What a journey, right?
Yeah.
Would you change? What would you change if you had to change one thing?
You know, I don't know if I would change it because it's not in my personality. I'm like a very tenacious person. Right. But what I will say is, you know, I kind of had this story that I think most young people do, especially who are academics, that, you know, it all had to be done on a certain timeline.
Right.
And, you know, when I started college doing something completely different in a different state, and I transferred and none of those credits transferred. And I still was like, I have to get done in 4 years. Like, I was just like, that has to happen. And then grad school, but I would say most people, so they offer the program on like a 4 year or a 5 year or 6 year track. And I did it in 4 years. You know, most people come in on 4 years, and by your second year, about 80% of people have switched over to a 5 year track to make it a little bit more manageable. And I just had this story that I had to get it done in 4 years, and I did. And I remember the day that I graduated, like my family's all there, you know, I graduated, we were celebrating, and I was just like, like just out of it, you know? And I went for a walk with my mom, and I was just staring out at the water because I was in Seattle. And I remember telling her, I was like, I feel like I just survived a 4 year trauma.
Really?
Yes. And like, again, like I was happy and I loved it and it was wonderful and it was meaningful. And I feel like my body was in PTSD for sure. And, you know, I kind of had this realization in that moment, because I graduated medical school when I was 26, that I was like, and that's cool. Like, it's cool to say I was a doctor at 26, but at the same time, I realized, what was I in such a hurry for? You know, what was I rushing towards? Because it now was. Like, I was at the
beginning of my education.
Exactly. I was like, where else was I going to go? You know, I was at the pinnacle of my education, and it was like, it was basically like getting pushed from Mama Eagle off the cliff, you know, to go fly. And
I do it now.
Yeah. And it was like, why was I killing myself to get there so much faster? When like, really, I had time, you know? And like I said, I don't know that I would have done it differently, because that's just my personality. Like, I have this thing about wanting to prove to myself and the world what I can do. But I tell all my students that now, I'm just like, you have time, you know, you're going to be working and doing this thing the rest of your life. And like, you have, you know, like, just enjoy the process.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing that I wish I could have like heard that when I was in it. But
to enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I did, but I think you just feel like you're holding on to a roller coaster the whole time.
Some like white knuckle like roller coasters.
Right. It's just maybe not white knuckle it so hard.
I think you like roller coasters, don't you?
I sure do.
Yeah, I can tell. Dr. Kelsey, you know, one of the things that you also discovered is that a lot of the things that you were going through as a teenager, you didn't have to. Had you found a doctor like you, right? Mm-hmm. You would have had that, I think, would have been a nice change for you, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Now the teenager's going through it. Any parents who are listening now, they know that sometimes conventional medicine is not always the right answer. We have to look for those alternatives that are going to make a difference. Because listen, if you take medication every day and it's not making a difference in your life, why are you taking that medication? Mm-hmm. Just like you were prescribed and you're like, wait a minute, this stuff is not working, right?
Right.
And you made a decision upon yourself to say, no, this is not for me. Mm-hmm. But you continually do that. You do that today.
Yeah.
Because you're not stuck on status quo. You are continually pursuing your purpose. You found your purpose. So many people, doesn't matter the age, they could be 90 and still never found their purpose. But you found your purpose and you rushed to it. And you know what? I think you did it the best way for you.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But here's the thing. Your purpose is not, you're not done, because you're still pursuing things. You're still going forward. You want to change the way we look at healthcare. Why is that important to you?
I think that, you know, and I can only speak for the United States, because I haven't lived in other countries, and other countries have other forms of medicine, which I think is great.
Right.
But I think the United States, for too long, I mean, decades upon decades upon decades, has had, you know, kind of evolving, but ultimately the same kind of perspective on healthcare, which is that the doctor is kind of this either like parent or like dictator role, that the patient only comes to when they're sick and they are told by the doctor what to do, or they're given a prescription and then they go back out to their life. I feel like the power has been taken away from the people in terms of their own healthcare. And that for the longest time that was given to the doctor as this like head figure in their life who just said, like, you don't need to understand why this works, just take this, you know? And I have a problem with that, but I feel like...
Likewise.
But I feel like most people are waking up to that and having a problem with that now. Like, people want to understand, you know, they want to understand their bodies. They want to understand why they feel the way that they feel. They want to understand what's really underneath it. And not everybody, but a lot of people do, you know, they don't want just the Band-Aid. And the unfortunate thing about that dynamic that's been going on for so long is what ends up happening is, you know, when people have been kind of told to relinquish that power for so long, or that's all they've been used to, right, then I think it's really also easy for people to become very complacent in their health. And they don't even know that they are, you know, but it's kind of like, I always laugh at like this idea of, you know, people taking their multivitamin supplement so that they can continue like living a unhealthy lifestyle. Like, that's not what those are designed for. Like, they are supplemental to a good health, you know, or to good health or good healthy practices. It's not an excuse to continue binge drinking on the weekend and eating McDonald's every day. And, you know, and I'm not saying that out of
judgment. But I take my multi.
Right. But I take my multi. So I'm like, I must be healthy, you know? And like, I'm not saying that out of judgment, because I think that's just what we've been taught for so long. Like, that's, you know, it's like, I have so many patients who come in and say, I think I eat pretty healthy. And with all of my patients, I do a diet recall. We talk about their nutrition. And like, I mean, in 7 years, I've maybe had like 5 patients who truly were locked in on nutrition. And again, it's none of these people's fault. You know, it's not that they're lazy. It's not that they're, you know, it's just we've not been taught that. Our media teaches us that healthy eating is buying a steamable Lean Cuisine, you know, like that.
Or Diet Coke.
Right. Or a Diet Coke, or getting the salad at Wendy's. You know, right. It's like, we've never been taught, you know, and like my parents, they didn't know any better. I was brought up on box mashed potatoes and frozen peas. You know, it's like that. They didn't know any better. They did the best that they could, because that's what it was all about, you know? And so I think we're kind of entering this time where people are curious, which I think is so important. I think they're wanting more. They're wanting to understand. They're wanting to take some of that power back and make those decisions. And they want more than just a 10 or 15 minute call with somebody who's sitting at their desk, not even looking at them, who's just going to write them a prescription for a pill that they don't understand.
Right, right. You know, and talking about that, I remember, I think I might have been 18 or 19. I had a new HMO, and they required that I go to this specific clinic. You know, I had to pick a place. So I went to a place near home, and they had to do a full checkup. This doctor came in, young guy, and, you know, I'm there getting a full checkup. And then he goes, you know, you have a possibility of getting tuberculosis when you're older. And I'm like, why are you saying that? Oh, because, you know, there's that. I'm like, okay. He goes, you need to take this medication. And I said, why? Because you might get it later on.
As we all might.
So I said, do I have it now? He goes, no. I said, so he goes, this is preventive. I said, but I don't have it, right? No. I said, what are the side effects? I just want to know, what are the side effects? And he goes through a slew of side effects. And I go, you know, I'm going to pass. Thank you for the recommendation.
Now, I'll take the risk.
But here's the thing. What if I was so naive and didn't take care to ask a question? And because he is an authoritative figure, and I said, oh, he's a doctor. He knows better than me. He went to schooling. He did all this thing. He's in practice. Yeah. I should listen to him. Mm-hmm. What if I did that? And now I would have all these things wrong with me because of his suggestion. Mm-hmm. Of the pills that the expense I would have had to incur, all the different things that would have happened to me had I not stood up for myself and questioned the authority figure, right? And that's, I think that's where, you know, I love the fact that, and I want to get into your investigative, creative mind.
Sure.
Because from my understanding, and a couple of things, when we see a doctor, how important is it to interview them if we don't know them? How important is it to ask them, listen, I don't care about your diploma. I want to know what your thinking is. Mm-hmm. To me, I don't mean to be rude or crude or anything like that, but your diploma, listen, a lot of people have a diploma. Mm-hmm. It's what they do, their actions, their habits, the way they treat people, and the outcomes that I'm interested in, especially when it's my outcome that I'm looking out for.
Right.
So tell me, how important is that?
I mean, I think it's so important, you know, and I can talk about this from both sides. Like as a patient, I think it's very important that you interview your doctors because there's a bunch of doctors out there, you know, and I will say kind of as an aside, we don't necessarily need to get into this today unless you want to, but like politically, there are some issues in my field where it's not always cut and dry and clear as to like if your naturopathic doctor actually is a naturopathic doctor. So, you know, you do need to do your research and figure out like where they went to school and what their training is in. But, mm-hmm. you know, just like any person that you've ever walked in the room and met and you either know that you like that person, you feel safe around that person, or you don't, that can happen with a doctor.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, and like we're talking about your health now, you know, and that's kind of that's a higher priority issue that you want to make sure that the person you're working with is somebody that you trust and that you're comfortable with for so many reasons. You know, I mean, there have been so many studies that just the doctor-patient relationship, like just the rapport, makes up a huge percentage of the therapeutic value right. of that interaction. Like, I mean, I truly believe that probably 75% of my value to my patients is just the fact that I sit and listen to them.
Yeah.
I mean, like truly, you know, so I think that you want to make sure that you feel comfortable with somebody because that in and of itself is therapeutic. Whereas if you feel stressed or you feel, you know, in like anxious, like that's going to get in the way of your healing. You want to know that it's somebody that you trust enough to actually tell like some of those more vulnerable things too.
Right.
You know, like as a doctor, like we need to know those things. We don't necessarily need to know all of them all at the same time if you're not ready to go there. Mm-hmm. But like those really add to our understanding of your picture and how to take care of you, especially somebody who's doing more than just providing a pill, you know. And I keep saying that and I'm not trying to be disparaging to my like medical doctor colleagues. I do think that there is a time and place for conventional medicine and pharmaceuticals and all of that. But you know, so much of what I do with my patients like falls down onto counseling and some of like the energetic stress that's in their body long term. And, you know, if they can't tell me that there was a trauma happening to them at some point in their life, then I'm not going to know that that's a piece that we need to heal, you know? So I think it's hugely important. I also think as a doctor, it's really important to me to always sit down and like kind of interview my patient because one, like I want to make sure that I'm the right fit for them. You know, mm-hmm. I want to make sure that they're also the right fit for me. I don't want somebody to come in and pay, you know, to see me if they're not going to be ready to do the things that I'm asking them to do. You know, then it becomes a waste of their time. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of both of our energies. You know, so it's like people need to be ready. And I think having that conversation makes that happen.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, one of the things that always concerns me is doctors who don't have time for you. Mm-hmm. For example, I needed a knee surgery. I found the best doctor who actually operated on the Yankees. I'm in New York, same doctor. And I said, he's the guy that's going to do my knees. I'm an athlete. Absolutely zero bedside manner. Zero. I thought it was Herman Munster when I met him. He came in so cold and it was like, you know, this is the knee. Yeah, okay, that's it. And then he marked it and left. And then even when I went back for the after visit, I didn't see him. And I'm like, where is he? Oh, he'll be in. He comes in, gives me a piece of paper with exercises and then a recommendation for a therapy place and just walks out the door. And I'm like, what did just happen?
Yeah.
Like I have 1,000 questions and this is all I get. So I go back outside and at the front, they're like, oh, no, he's with another patient. He can't see you today. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Even though I've had 3 knee surgeries, none from anything I did physically. Everything was from something else. But when I had someone else go in and I had an ACL reconstruction, this particular doctor said, whoever did your first surgery was amazing. They did a beautiful job. I'm like, okay, thank God. Then that same doctor was great with me, bedside manner, the whole deal. But when I went back to my follow-up, it wasn't him. I never saw him again. Mm-hmm. It was a PA. And I said, where's the doctor? Oh, he's not going to see you anymore. I'm like, what? So yeah. He goes, yeah, I'm here to take out your stitches. I said, no, you're not. I said, I'm leaving. And I left. I took out my own stitches. Probably I shouldn't have done it, but I was just so fed up. I took out my own stitches. And I was like, so I don't need them. I know how to take out stitches anyhow, but probably not the smartest thing on my end, but I'm good, right? But when we think about the way, oh my gosh, you're the kind of doctor that is unheard of. I want you to tell us the process you go through when you have a patient. How long? Oh my gosh. I really want to get into this. They make an appointment with you.
Yep.
They come into your beautiful offices, and I know you just did them. They come into your office. They're not there 5 minutes. They're not there 10 minutes. They're there. And this is the first time.
Yep.
First time.
For an hour and a half. They're here for an hour and a half.
Holy cannoli. So you, why? Is it because you're having coffee with them? Are you having biscuits? What are you doing?
Sometimes I'm having coffee with them. We do have a little tea bar in here so people can get tea and water while we're in here.
love it.
So the first appointment, it is 90 minutes and it's in my office with me. It's not like an hour out in the lobby waiting for me and then a half. It's an hour and a half face to face with me. And that time is spent really digging into their primary concerns, like the reason they're there that day, but then also all of the history that contributes to that. You know, so when somebody comes in and they tell me that they have, I don't know, see if you throw out a condition.
I feel bloated.
Okay. So that's very common. So if they come in and they say, I'm bloated, you know, I've got some GI stuff. It's almost always worse in the afternoon. I look like I'm pregnant, you know? So this is kind of how my questioning sequence tends to go, is we'll dive into that. I'll be like, okay, so first of all, I'll just have them tell me about it. I'll kind of let them do their narrative. And then I will start going into my questions. So I'll say, when did this first show up for you? And, you know, most of the time, people aren't coming in until it's been going on for long enough that they've noticed it's a problem, right? So it's been going on for a while. And then I'll say, okay, how often does it occur? And when it occurs, how long does it last? And have you noticed anything in your life that seems to potentially make it better? Like anything you use to help deal with this? Is there anything in your life that seems to make it worse? Is there anything that seems to go on around the same time in your body that may or may not be related, like other symptoms that pop up? You know, how intense is it on a scale of 1 to 10, or how does it range? What are the characteristics of it? So we get into all of these really like details about their condition. And then I usually will say, okay, have we covered everything that you wanted to tell me about that? Or is there anything else I'm missing that you think I should know? And then if they have anything else, we'll talk about it. You know, and usually I'll say, you know, it's like with GI stuff, I'll often be like, okay, well, you know, did you have GI issues as a baby? Like, did your parents ever say you were really colicky or really fussy? Have you ever noticed if there's certain foods that cause an issue for you? Were you ever put on a lot of antibiotics as a child growing up for either ear infections or yeast infections or whatever? You know, all of these things that can contribute to an imbalanced GI. I'm asking all those questions because, you know, as you and I and probably everybody listening knows, there's like a bazillion things that can happen in your gut. So I'm trying to hone in on which thing it is so that I can kind of figure out exactly where we need to go in terms of treatment or testing or some, or whatever it is to be very specific to that person. And so then we'll go through their other chief complaints, and then I'll go through their entire body system head to toe on things that are pertinent. So I'll be like, okay, well, do you have earaches? Do you have sinus infections? Do you have heartburn? Do you have, you know, and we spend a long time talking about their poop. Yeah. Like, what are the characteristics of their bowel movements? And we go through all of that.
Wow.
And then I'll do a physical exam.
So, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we go through so much information.
Oh my goodness.
Just for me to really know who this person is in front of me so that I can individualize their care and I can say, okay, based on everything I've now learned about you and based on what you're wanting and what I know it's going to take to get there, these are the next steps. These are the labs. Mm-hmm. These are the supplements. These are the nutrition things we need to consider. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, I mean, it is a conversation, because at the end of all that, what I always tell my patients before they even come in is that, you know, I can give them all of my expertise in the office, but they're the ones who have to go home and live it.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I'm not going to go home and cook their meals. I'm not going to go home and take their supplements. I mean, they have to do that. So they need to be on board. And I find that the best way they're going to be on board is if they understand why they're doing it. So there's a huge educational piece. There's a huge coaching piece where I'm trying to explain to them, this is my thinking and this is what's happening. I mean, I take 30 minutes at minimum to go over people's labs with them, you know, just so they really understand what's going on in their body. Right. And then like, here's this product. This is why I'm recommending it. It's going to affect this pathway in the body. And I draw pictures and, you know, this is what you can expect to feel from it. Here's the potential side effects if you have a bad reaction, in which case you need to call me and let me know so we can change it. Mm. I mean, it is a very dynamic conversation where they get to say, like, they get to say, yeah, no, that's not going to work for me. So I could be like, okay, fine. Then let's pick something different.
I mean, wow. Yeah. You know, I'm loving this whole thing that you do, which is, there you are. You put on your little FBI hat, right? And you got your Sherlock Holmes lens. Forget the pipe, but your lens, and you're digging deep, right? But not only are you digging, but you're also educating. Wow. Because to me, only if you ask a doctor a question will they answer you in a rush, right? That's my experience that I've ever had. It's a rush. It's like, and you're like, can you let me write that down for a second? Yeah. But you're doing something way different, where you're saying, let's take this path and let me explain to you why. And now you're educating them. And if it does not make sense to them, you look for an alternative, which to me is huge. So let me ask you, how come there's not more doctors like you?
That's what I'm trying to change. You know, I think it's just lack of knowledge. I really think that's all it is. Like, this is truly one of those knowledge is power moments, right? But I think so many people like me grew up in a smaller box and just didn't know that there was another way.
Right.
You know, and like, I, you know, a lot of my patients, I mean, my patients in a huge regard are self-selected, because they have to know they want to find me, right? Mm. But some people just like get fed up and go on Google and will type natural doctor, you know, and then they find out that we exist.
Right.
So I think a lot of it is just lack of education. There's, you know, unfortunately, there's a lack of marketing and lack of recognition and lack of research in the world that I revolve in. And I think so much of that is political. I think so much of it is, you know, that's a whole other episode. it's money and who's rubbing elbows with who, and, you know, where attention goes to. And unfortunately, I think there's a lot of suppression of this type of medicine in our country.
Right. Yeah. You know, it makes me think that it's a numbers game, right? In sales, it's a numbers game. How many people you present to, you know, if you present to two people, you only get maybe one sale. If you present to 300 people, you're going to get maybe 30 sales, 40 sales. It depends, right, on what you're selling. But so many doctors is like, how many patients can I see today so I can get this amount of money?
Right.
Is that still happening? Or is it, how many patients can I help today, instead of how many patients can I make money off?
That is a really, really great question that I think has an unfortunate answer to it. I think it can be both. You know, I think, so in my field especially, you know, our scope and our insurance coverage varies state by state. So in the state of Colorado, where I am, insurance does not recognize any naturopathic care. So everything I do is out of pocket. And, you know, naturopathic education, the medical school training we go through, is not supported by any kind of grant funding at all. That education is like 100% on the backs of the students, like 100%, you know, and there's kind of, it's this layers of unfortunate circumstances that, you know, when I graduated school, and it's obviously changed over the years and it's only going to get worse, I'm sure. But when I graduated from school, I graduated with about $375,000 of debt just from grad school. And, you know, that's like a cheap house these days.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, the unfortunate thing about it is that when you leave school, you have this massive amount of money. And especially in my industry, like there's not hospital jobs waiting to hire us. You know, our doctors have to open up their own clinics or have to find colleagues who are willing to bring them in. And so you end up having to also become an entrepreneur, a business person, which, you know, not everybody is. Not all doctors are meant to be that. And that's nothing against them, but it's just not who everybody is. And we're not taught that in school. And so you end up having this picture where you have doctors who really just want to help people. Like they really just want to spend their time with people. They want to help people. But they also have this massive, massive amount of debt that they have to pay back and don't really have a great business sense or don't really have a great value of what they're bringing to the table and maybe not charging enough. And when I started, as much as I hated it, every patient was a dollar sign to me. It was like, how am I going to keep the lights on? How am I going to, you know, buy my groceries? How am I going to live the life that I'm trying to tell my patients to live? You know, how am I going to afford to go to the gym? You know, these things. And it sucks. You know, I don't think any doctor goes into school thinking that it's going to be that way.
Right.
But, you know, our healthcare system doesn't support a healthcare system. It supports a disease care system and it supports, you know, it's a really unfortunate thing. And so I think it does start that way for a lot of people, even though they still have the best of intentions, they're also just struggling to keep the business open so they can keep helping people. At some point along the way, you burn out on doing that. Sure. You know, I burned out after 3 years, which is nothing in a career, you know, and so something had to change. So I changed my entire business model. I had to do a lot of self-work to realize what value I actually brought to the table, which is massive. Like it is such a specialty, not just what I do, but also the time and attention I give my patients. And as soon as I realized that, my patients realized that, you know, and then the business changed. And then it was about seeing my patients and it wasn't about the dollar sign anymore. And yet I was making more money and my patients were getting better. You know what I mean? It's like everything changed for the better.
Right. It was you figuring out how to serve them better.
Yes.
But the most important person was serving you as well, because how could you serve them better if you're stressed, if you're worried about like, oh my gosh, I need to eat healthy, but you know, I don't have enough money, or I need to make the right choices. I need to be able to live in an actual apartment, not in somebody's couch in order to help other people.
Right.
So I am so grateful that you were able to find a way for you to serve, right? Because your purpose, and I can tell, and you're beautiful at doing it. Your heart and soul are in it, is to serve, is to help, and to bring light to all of us. So I thank you and I appreciate you so much for doing that. And, you know, please continue. Don't ever stop doing what you're doing. One of the things that really intrigues me is that you're constantly moving along. You're constantly evolving. You know, not only, obviously, you have to stay on top with all the medicine, all the technology, all the different things that are happening in the world. But the fact that you're looking to help other people navigate that, that is very commendable. So
thank you.
Kudos.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think such a better healthcare system is possible, you know, and I think that starts with the doctors who are providing it, recognizing that they can provide that and recognizing the importance of that, because I think that translates, you know, patients can feel it. They can feel when you're confident in your work. They can feel when you're, you know, when you're stressed, they know all of that stuff. So it does start, you can't pour from an empty glass, you know, so we need to be filling ourselves and then we need to be just teaching people. You know, like, and you know this, you know, one of my big missions that kind of came out of this recognition and out of my burnout was realizing that there needs to be a better system for doctors. And so while I do patient care, I also am coaching other doctors and how to do what I do. And I'm doing business consulting, not just for naturopathic doctors, but for, you know, any doctor who kind of sees that our system is broken and wants to do it a different way.
Yeah. One of the things that a lot of doctors give advice, but they don't take it themselves, right? Like, oh, it looks like, you know, your cholesterol is high. You better start eating better, or this or that, or you just had a heart attack and this and that. Meanwhile, they're not taking care of themselves.
Right.
This is like another 20 days in conversation if we talk about the abuse that goes on in healthcare with medication.
Yeah.
You know, even doctors prescribing their own medication, hurting themselves even, because they don't think of food as medicine,
right?
Which I know that you do. And, you know, when we had lunch and we talked about this, how important what we eat. And look, even in Europe, certain foods that are allowed here in the United States are not allowed there.
Yep.
Right? Certain things that are put into our foods and our breads and so forth are not allowed. They're illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, we're ingesting them.
Yep.
How dangerous is that? And why are we not looking deeper into why is it that they are banned in other countries, but we're okay with it here?
Right.
Why is that?
I mean, I think everything just comes back to politics and money. Yeah. But I mean, it is astounding. It's like there are so many people who, you know, are celiac or gluten sensitive in the United States, and you can go to Europe and eat all the bread you want and not have a problem. You know, I mean, I think that if you look at how medicine looks in the rest of the world, it is vastly different country to country, but so many countries are open and accepting of more natural practices like homeopathy or herbal medicine or Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine. I mean, there's, you know, or curanderismo, which is like the tribal Mexican Hispanic medicine. You know, I mean, there's like so many options out there. And in our country, we're just like, this is the only one, you know? And like, if you think back into the history about that, there's like some dirty history as to why that happened.
Right.
And then if enough decades pass and enough generations pass of like, this is what we have and this is what we pass down, like that just becomes normal. You know, people don't know to question that. And I don't know why the United States is able to get away with certain things like that. Like, I just don't know. You know, it's like supplements here, there's almost zero regulation on supplements. And so it's totally up to each individual supplement company if they want to swallow the money it takes to do quality assurance testing, which is why most of the products that you buy at Target and Costco and Walmart are total junk. Like, you're just making your urine more expensive, you know?
Yeah.
That's why, like, buying a physician line product is more expensive, is because it's quality tested and you know that it's actually going to benefit your body. But like, nobody talks about this.
Right.
So, I mean, it's, I don't know. And unfortunately, because of that, the burden falls on the individual, whether they're the doctor or the patient, to do that research and ask the big questions and ask the hard questions. And it's a challenge. And I, you know, I'd like to think it's changing. I think so many more people are like demanding that it is changing.
Right. When I was selling, you know, smoothies and all that stuff at my location, and I was buying the products from a really good company, they were Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And they are illegal unless they're processed or a certain way. And it's only if they pass, not FDA and all that stuff, but it's got to be, it's almost like a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
So that it is the real, they've done all the testing correctly. They've done everything to make sure, because there is no guarantees of any powders that you get here in the States, as you mentioned. So for me, it was important to figure out which company I wanted to sell their products for, right? I'm providing a health product, a smoothie that's supposed to be healthy.
Right, that's supposed to improve health, not make it worse.
The other day I went to a store and they had opened up a new smoothie place. I'm not going to give the name of it, but it had a big QR code and it said, the free smoothies on us. Now, how many people are going to be enticed by scanning it, getting the smoothie and getting caught up in that whole thing. Meanwhile, they're probably the amount of sugar in those smoothies are beyond.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they're like full of sorbets and artificial sugars.
Oh, yeah, all that. So I was like, oh, that's pretty good. And I said, oh, I wouldn't mind a smoothie. I'm like, but I'm going to go home and make it myself because I know exactly what's going in it. It's the fruit and vegetables that we can make. How important is it for us to know what we're eating and for us to basically, if we don't know how to cook, to maybe take a lesson or two, how important is it for us to make our own food?
I mean, I think it's really important. I think that's a big question, right? Yeah. I think there are some places in our country, like especially the Pacific Northwest and down through the West Coast, that like, if you're not a cook, you can still find some pretty great places that are pretty health conscious that you can eat at, you know, and you're going to certainly pay top dollar for that, but you can find it. So I think that's happening. I think more and more restaurants across the country are starting to label their foods as, you know, gluten-free or vegetarian or vegan. So it's becoming easier for people who have, you know, who want to be dietary conscious, but maybe aren't there yet in terms of food preparation.
Right.
But I think at the end of the day, there's a huge shift that changes in your relationship with food when you prepare it yourself. You know, that doesn't mean you have to grow it yourself. That's like a whole other, like, I love gardening, but that's like a whole other world. Right. That's, you know, not for everybody. It's a whole other level of commitment. But, but you know, I think when you buy it and you see it, whether you're going to a farmer's market or, you know, a more health conscious grocer, and you know, you're seeing it there, you're seeing it fresh, you're smelling it, you're feeling it, your hands are on it when you're preparing it, and you're putting in the work. There is a different quality to that food that happens because you've worked for it, right? And you have a different relationship with it. Whereas, you know, it's funny because my relationship with food has totally changed. Like when I was younger, I felt like food was such a waste of money. You know, I was like, you spend your money and you eat it and then it's gone. And so is your money. You know, like I was like, this isn't an investment, you know?
No, it's not, but it is.
So wrong, you know? And now like the majority of my money is put towards food, you know, that like, absolutely. And it's like, you know, the old movie, I think they were going to redo it, but like Water for Chocolate. I don't know if you've heard that, but it's kind of about how like the energy you put into cooking gets translated in your food. Mm. And I think that has such a bigger impact on your body. Well, you know, I'm kind of careful using this word because people get a little weird about it, but like the energy of it is different. It's like the energy you put into it comes back at you. Whereas somebody who's like just behind, like a cook line person who's just like burger after burger after burger after burger, like slapping it out, like they don't know you, they don't care about you, they don't care how that's feeding you, you know, and that's different. And then you're scarfing it down just to get it down as fast as you can so you can get back to whatever else you're doing in your day. Whereas if you like are really taking the time and making it be a ritual of self-care, where it's like, this is my ritual, this, like, you know, I think so much of people's day they give to other people, like they're giving to their patients or to their colleagues or to their children or to their partners. I mean, we're constantly giving out to other people. We're giving to social media. We're constantly out.
Right.
And if you can just say like, okay, I do that all day long, but this time of the day, this is for me.
Yes.
This is my ritual where I get to cook my food and I get to enjoy this time and maybe put on some music and get curious and get interested and try things. And maybe it doesn't always work out, you know, but I think that is a much different relationship with food.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, one of the things that I was talking about, the relationship with food, how we actually have to talk to it. And, you know, for me, I'm always saying, like, what are you going to do to me once I ingest you? How are you going to treat me? How am I going to feel in an hour, 2 hours, maybe even later from taking you into my body? The relationship with food does change when you start to, instead of like, you know, just take something and eat it, take something and eat it, all of a sudden you're watching a show or something on Netflix or whatever, and you're just eating something, you're eating chips or whatever, and it's without thought, right? There's no process of like, what am I going to eat? Instead of saying, you know what, why don't I get some berries or strawberries or something healthy, and I only have this amount. Not a huge bag, you know, big potato chip bags or whatever bags. And have your portion, right? So talking about portion control, so that you know, yeah, maybe you're not thinking about it because you're into whatever show you may be watching, or you may be talking to somebody and you don't have to think about it, but it's already portioned out for you. How important is portioning?
I mean, I think that's really important, but I would almost say I think being present to your eating is more important.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you will automatically know your portion control if you're actually conscious of what you're eating, right? Like every baby comes into this world with the built-in mechanism of knowing when they're hungry and when they're not. Like they know when they've had enough milk and they're done, you know? And then somewhere along the way, that gets overridden. I think a lot of that is kind of the generation of like, you can't leave the table till you clear your plate kind of thing.
That is so but terrible.
Oh, we're taught to override that. And you can bring that back. You know, I think sitting down and if you're distracted, if you're watching Netflix or doing something, your brain is paying attention to that and not to the sensors in your stomach that tell you you're full. Right. And so it's easy to just keep eating and eating. But if you actually are present to it, and maybe you know, you're present to every aspect of that single raspberry that you eat, to what it smells like, to what it feels like on your tongue, to the juices when you bite into it, to what it feels like and tastes like when you swallow it. One, that experience of food, like that is an experience. Like that is something people go and pay to be entertained by. You know, I mean, it's not, but like it should be. Like that is an experience of food. And if you're eating your food that way and truly being in the moment and feeling it and tasting it and using all of your senses, you're going to eat slower and you're going to be so much more in tune and aware of when that switch clicks on and says, you've had enough. And then you'll be like, oh, I'm good. And I'm like actually good because I'm so satisfied by that experience that I just had.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, when we think about food, the relationship that we have with it, right? And you know, you get people who say, you know, this is what I'm going to do because I'm mad, or I'm going to eat because I'm upset, or I'm going to do this or that because of their emotions. And instead of separating the emotions from what your body needs, it's your mental, right? Your mental capacity to understand that whatever emotions you're going through, you're only hurting yourself if you use food as an excuse to do that, right?
Right. But the problem is so many people then go into this cycle of, we all have these stories of being not worth it or not worth taking care of.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and so I agree with you. It's not just the food, you know, it's the mindset. And a lot of times for people, it is untangling some story that has been told to them. But it's like, I mean, I think this is so fascinating. I was fortunate enough to go to Paris earlier this year, and I can't help but observe people when I'm walking around, you know, and I like notice their gait and I'm like, oh, they need a lift in their shoe. You know, like I can't just be out in the world, but
right.
I'm noticing like all of the people in Paris, you know, as a general, this is a general statement, but like so many people smoke, so many people are drinking all day. Like, you know, they have their mid-afternoon drink and then they're up until like 1 or 2 in the morning drinking and they're eating pasta. Like the food is so rich, right? But what I also noticed is like almost nobody was overweight. Almost no. I mean, like, it's just like, there's so much less stressed.
Yeah.
You know, and they really experience their food and they experience the company they're with when they're eating their food and they're walking around to different, I mean, it's just a different life. So it's like in our country, we think like, oh, like breads and pastas are going to make you overweight and they're terrible for you. And it, you know, we're very like carb haters in our country, but you know, going to Paris and seeing this really made me realize like, you know, it's, I mean, I kind of knew it, but seeing it, it's like, oh, it's not about the macronutrients versus the micronutrients. It's not like this war with your food of like, oh my God, I just have to eat a salad because otherwise I'm, you know, it's the fact that you're eating that salad and you're hating every minute of it is probably what's adding that extra pound. You know, I mean, it's just like, there's so much negativity coming in your body where it's like, I'll tell my patients, you know, if you're going to go home and eat that ice cream, go home and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Be present with it because then it's going to have a good impact on you. And then you may not eat as much, and then you're going to feel good about yourself, and you might make better choices in your life. I mean, it's like, you know, there's so many there's so many different aspects that come together.
But don't make a habit of eating ice cream every day.
I mean, I don't, but chocolate, that's my thing.
There you go. For example, so many people have food allergies, mm-hmm. and there's so many ailments. And I love the fact that you are getting to know who your patients are, because they may have, and I also, before you said pick something that's wrong, and I said your gut, right? Because it's certain foods that will affect you differently than they will even affect your spouse or your children or your neighbor or whatever. So we are all so different that it is important for us to find out what affects us, how it affects us. So that's why that communication with your food, it might seem silly. Hey, carrot, what are you going to do for me? So here's the thing, right? I got stung by a bee when I was 18 in the park. And I had got stung before. Nothing ever happened to me. It's just a bee sting, big deal. You know, it kind of hurts and whatever, and you get rid of it. Not this one. This one was carrying. I didn't know it at the time. My face blew up. As big of a nose as I have, you couldn't even see me. My face, I had slits for eyes. My face was out here. My arms bubbled up, my legs, my whole body. Once I got to the correct, I went to a hospital, I left it. I went home. Finally, my dad took me to the hospital because he goes, you look like a, you know, like a cushion. Uh-huh. And you're about to die. So I'm taking you to the hospital. So once I got there, they realized there was a bee, but they realized that that bee was carrying some sort of poison. So I stayed overnight. They gave me all this Benadryl, but, you know, also different medication. Since that time, anytime I get stung by a bee, I'm super allergic. And then I became allergic to apples and anything like that. And I just kept getting frustrated because those are the things I love to eat.
Right.
And so every time, but I can have apple pie. I just couldn't eat an apple. I'm like, that's strange. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. And one day I was going to Puerto Rico and I got bumped to first class. Talk about a great, great thing.
I mean, how'd that happen? That's a whole other talk.
That's another talk. But I got bumped to first class and the guy brought me in and I couldn't eat peanuts either because I used to eat peanuts. And this guy brings out peanuts. Would you like some peanuts? I'm like, okay, I'm going to try some peanuts. But they were cooked. They were prepared. And I was like, I ate them. I was like, oh my God, I didn't swell up. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. So I told the guy, I'm like, oh my God, these were the best, you know? And he before I left, he gave me a huge bag. He goes, here you go. I've never seen somebody so happy with just a couple of peanuts. So I gave you the whole bag. I was like, oh, that was amazing. So then I started looking into why is this happening? And I realized that I was allergic to the pesticides. Mm-hmm. That's what was bothering me. Mm-hmm. So then I started doing more organic. And one day I went to apple picking with my kids and I'm seeing all these apples and I'm like, oh, I said, you know what? I'm just going to take it. I took an apple. I ate it. Nothing happened. I took another apple, ate it. Nothing happened. Can I tell you, I bought 60 pounds of apples. And that week, all I did was eat apples. Can I tell you, I had a clean system because, you know, it passes right through. Oh,
good fiber.
Great fiber. But now I can eat apples. Mm-hmm. I can eat strawberries. I can eat everything. I kind of retrained my body to be able to eat the healthy stuff. One day I bought a bag of carrots. I'm sitting eating carrots. I guess I ate too many because all of a sudden my face blew up. I was like, oh, I got to get my Benadryl and, you know, calm it down. But when we think about the food that we eat and how it affects us, we have to be so aware, mm-hmm. right? I wish more doctors were like you, right? Who talk to us about our food, our intake, our habits of even what kind of foods affect the way we are, even our moods, right? Foods affect our moods as well.
Oh yeah. I'm one of those people. And I realized at some point that like I don't have a dairy allergy, but I realize because you have to pay attention, right? You don't notice these things unless you pay attention. You have to pay attention to yourself and feel what your body's trying to tell you. every time I ate dairy, I would be depressed for like 3 days afterwards. Really? Like, I just can't get off the couch. I don't want to work. I'm not motivated. Mm. I'm cranky. Like, I mean, I'm very lucky my fiance hasn't left me after 5 years because of that, you know what I mean? It's like, but at some point I realized like, oh, there's this pattern that's happening. Mm. And I don't like how I feel when I feel that way. And so then I started kind of testing it. And sure enough, you know, it's like it was, and it finally got to the point that it was like, I don't like feeling that way more than I like in eating the dairy, you know? So like, I just don't eat it anymore because it's not worth it to me. But that's not a like run of the mill food sensitivity gut reaction, you know? And like most people who have food sensitivities, especially if it's a food they're eating every day, because food sensitivities are complex, they can hang out in the system, you know, for a while. So it's like, if they're eating that food every day or almost every day, their body is going to be inflamed from it every day. Mm. And so however they feel becomes what they think is normal for them because right. like, well, this is how I feel. I'm just always tired. Mm. I'm just always tired. That's normal, you know, or like I always have like rumbling guts. That's normal. Or I'm always a little cranky. It's just, I'm a cranky, but like they normalize it because it's there all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you like take it out long enough, they suddenly are like, I didn't know I could feel this good.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea. And then they try it again and they're like, oh my God, I feel awful. Like it's, you know, it's like they realize it. But I think that is what happens with true sensitivities that aren't an allergy. I mean, your reaction is like a true like allergy. Like you can't ignore that, you know, but no. Most people, like if they have a sensitivity, it's kind of humming along in the background.
Yeah.
And they don't know that that could be getting in the way of, you know, their ability to level up in their career or getting in the way of their relationships or getting in the way of just how they feel every day.
How important, and would you even recommend a, like a 30-day food detox, like cut everything out and slowly start eating foods again? But when I say slowly, like, let's say you're not lactose intolerant, but let's say cheese, different types of cheese is what gives you an effect, but you don't know it because you mix them all up. And what you say, you cut out the cheeses entirely and then slowly introduce maybe a soft cheese, a different type of cheese or whatever it is, or even like anything that you can slowly introduce it. But when I say slowly, I mean, give it a week.
Yeah.
So that it sets in and then it'll tell you if it's reacting or not reacting or you're reacting to it.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, I truly think that there are, I mean, there's lots of food sensitivity tests out there, but they are the most imperfect tests on the market, you know, and they're expensive. So I think it's great for people to do something like that. I mean, and you can call it an elimination diet. You could call it, I mean, Whole30 is essentially that, you know, so that's something there's a lot of information out about, but that's something that like people can do for free. You know, because it's just the way they're eating. They're not paying for a test. And their bodies are so much more reliable at giving them feedback than a piece of paper, you know. And I think it is a great practice in paying attention and getting to know yourself. You know, it's like know thyself, right? So, mm-hmm. So like if you've never ever done anything like that before and you don't think you have a sensitivity to anything, you're like, I eat dairy, I eat gluten, I have no problems with anything. Like maybe that's true. And if it is, like lucky you, you know.
Right.
But it also wouldn't hurt to just like be curious and run a little experiment on yourself. And, you know, there's a ton of information on this that you can look up and you just take it all out for a month and then kind of slowly bring it back in and just see what kind of feedback does your body give you. Maybe you'll find that, oh, you're not as congested as you usually are. Maybe it wasn't allergies all along, but it was a food sensitivity. You know, I mean, it's like you just might know, you might find out things that could really elevate your life in an unexpected way.
Mm. Definitely. My gosh, you and I can talk for hours, can't we?
We could talk all day.
You know, I love your energy and the way you truly, truly care. And it's evident, you know, in all you do, the fact that you're helping people not only locally, but you're helping people all over the world, right? Because now you can have people reach out to you. In different ways, right? The most important thing that I think that you do is that you spend the time with people. Now, let me ask you, can somebody from across a state reach out to you?
Absolutely.
Oh, nice. And if somebody feels, And I think that this is going to maybe open up some doors in a way that maybe you didn't expect. But what if you did a one-day clinic or seminar where people came out to you and they came from all over so that they can go home? And obviously you wouldn't have the bandwidth to see everybody, but you had some of your colleagues there with you and they can all come and get better information as to who they are. Is that something that you think would be cool to do?
Oh yeah. I mean, here's the only thing, and I've mentioned this to you before, is that in the medical field, there are logistics that come up with our licenses, right? Which is why, you know, why you said they would have to come here, because it has to be in a state that I'm licensed for me to initiate care. Outside of that, once care is initiated, they can be back in their home state and we can do things virtually for the remainder of the year, as long as we're working on that same problem. And so there may be like periodic check-ins where I'm at. But yeah, I mean, I think doing some kind of, you know, event like that, or like a clinic or a 1 or 2 day thing would be pretty cool, because my whole big mission, which you know, is to not only elevate my industry, but to make it more public, you know, so people know that there are these doctors out there who are incredibly well educated and specialized in how the body works and how to support the body in a natural way so it can do its job normally, and who can interpret your labs and who can give you maybe some different perspectives to take home with you. You know, I think so much of it is dependent on where each patient is at. You know, some people are, it's like, what stage of change are you in? You know, it's like, if you're just kind of curious, that can be fun to just show up and be like, oh, wow, these are things I never thought of. Yeah. If you're somebody who's like, no, I'm ready for change, I just don't know how to get there, like, that's something we can help with. You know, if you're like, I'm ready for care right now and you're the person for me, like, that's something we can help with.
How about we do that and we make it happen and you know, use me to your benefit to see how we can get an event happening out by you.
That'd be cool.
And you know, even 4 or 5 months from now, where we have just, you know, we'll set everything together. We'll continue to post and let people know. I'm going to put my information, and obviously everybody has your information. Here's my information on how people can reach out to me. Just reach out to me, coachingcallpc@gmail.com, and just let me know that you're interested in this event. And that way we'll have your information. And the closer we get to putting it together, that we will have something for you to be part of, something where you can actually take your health back. Because listen, if you don't take care of your health, if you don't interview your doctors, who's going to do it for you?
Right.
Who's going to do it? Nobody. How important is that? How, if you have a doctor's appointment later today, tomorrow, next week, Dr. Kelsey, what's the first question they should ask?
If I'm the patient?
Yeah.
Great question. I would say, what would your approach be to this concern? Because I feel like a lot of people ask me, have you ever seen this before? You know, like, have you ever done this before? Which is also a fair question. But if, even if it's something I haven't seen before, that doesn't mean that I don't have knowledge on it. You know, it doesn't mean that I don't have an approach that might fit you better. So I'm more curious, like, does your approach line up with what resonates with me? And what, you know, is this a journey we can travel together?
Nice. So excited.
The energy is just flowing.
When we think about putting something like this together, I can only envision, should people come and actually bring their health history so that it makes it easier for you and your colleagues to go, hey, this is how we, it'll help expedite things, right? So that people can also come with maybe a binder, not only that, but like questions, right? So that, because so many times, and even now, if you go into a doctor later today, tomorrow, next week, next month, or even if you haven't had a checkup, time for a checkup. If you do, should you write down the questions at home before?
Oh, so sure.
If you're in front of them, you're going to forget, right? Things happen, you forget. Should you bring questions with you?
Yeah, so I have patients come in with questions written down all the time. They're like, these are things I've thought of since our last appointment that I want to talk about. I'm like, great. As far as coming prepared, I think things that can be really helpful to bring is like, a list, a printout of all of your supplements and medications that you're taking.
Right.
Because I want to see all that. You know, I want to know what ingredients are coming into your body. I think having, if you've had labs in the last 6 to 12 months, those are helpful to look at. Right. Truly, it's not as helpful for somebody to bring me a massive binder of the last 10 or 20 years of their life. Because it's going to take me an entire day to go through all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And health is so dynamic and it changes that where you were at 5 years ago may not really have a huge impact on where you're at today. So, you know, I'm more interested in like the immediate picture in terms of like labs and products and things like that. And then I'm more interested in the history that you're going to tell me as your story, not what's on paper. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's the combination of the data and your subjective experience. It's like you need to combine the subjective and objective, and that's more important. So bringing me like a huge notebook, most doctors actually don't like that because it's like we're required to look through all of it and it takes a ton of time and it doesn't always mean anything. But that's what I would say is like, you know, come prepared with questions, come prepared with like if you've had recent labs that come prepared with an open mind and being curious, you know, because again, this type of medicine, it's a different type of medicine. It's slower, it's more nurturing to the body. You know, in some ways it can be more expensive as an upfront cost, but it's certainly an investment that can save you down the road.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things, believe it or not, I'm already envisioning your event because that's what I do, right? So I'm envisioning like a setting where you are, I'm not putting everything on you. Obviously, you have colleagues that you know and you can count on. Where it's an event and it's almost like a classroom type of event where you're presenting things so people can go, aha, maybe even take notes. And then on the side, people can go and get their evaluation, if you will, right? Is that something that makes sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually done appointments before or webinars that people can sign up for where I will run, like I will basically interpret labs. Like, so I'll pick like, you know, some blacked out name, you know, and I'll go through, but I'll explain what all the labs are so people can look at their own.
Right.
And I'll be like, if it's high, it means this. If it's low, it means this. And so they can like interpret their own based on what I'm saying, you know? And so I think that's a great place to start. Naturopathic medicine is so big that I think we would want to have it more as like we kind of want to focus in on something, you know, about like, maybe it's about your general labs, or maybe it's about your gut health, or maybe it's about, you know, whatever it is. And then we could kind of talk about some aspects of that more generally. And then there could be a breakout where people could say, okay, this is my specific issue. That's kind of how I would picture that going.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. So I'm looking at 2 to 3 days. I gotcha. Listen, every time you and I talk, you know that. It's just, I feel, you know, your compassion. I feel the love that you bring to everyone. And I feel gifted just by knowing you. So thank you. It's a blessing to be in your presence so many times. And I can't wait till we make this happen and we do other things. And I know you have a schedule that's beyond crazy. And the fact that you took out, oh my gosh, a little bit over an hour and a half to spend with me and everybody listening, thank you. You are an amazing human being. Thank you so much.
It's what it's all about. It's about the education piece, right? Yeah. So I hope if I hit one person, then this was worth it.
Just one.
Yeah.
But guess what? I know you hit more than that. But yeah, you definitely hit me, so.
Well, there we go. We're done.
All right. Thank you. Have a blessed day and looking forward to our next conversation.
Likewise.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'll be back with a new episode and a new guest. You can find all episodes of the Coaching Call podcast on Apple, Anchor, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to podcasts. I ask that you please leave me an honest review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and buy me a cup of coffee. Make it a large. I'm trying to keep this episode free of advertisements. Anything you can donate to the cause is greatly appreciated. To donate, go to paypal.me/SifuRafael. Thank you and I really appreciate your help.